March 18th, 1990, Augusta, Georgia. After visiting a family friend, 15-year-old twin sisters Jeanette and Danette Millbrooks stop off at a gas station to buy food on their way home. After exiting the store, both girls vanish without a trace. After sharing some unconfirmed rumors that the twins disappeared voluntarily, law enforcement inexplicably decides to close the case without informing the family, and a proper investigation does not take place until 23 years later. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 12 of The Trail Went Cold. I am your host, Robin Warder, and the case I'm covering today is going to be a very special one because the victim's family actually requested that I feature their story on my podcast. A few months ago, I was contacted by a woman named Shantae Sturgis. 26 years ago, Shantae's two half-sisters, Jeanette and Danette Millbrooks, went missing at the exact same time. Jeanette and Danette also happened to be 15-year-old twins, so you'd think the uniqueness of this particular situation might have brought this case ample attention. But unfortunately, the exact opposite happened. To say that law enforcement failed this family in a big way would be a massive understatement. This episode is going to be a bit different from my usual formula. When selecting cases to feature on this podcast, I do like to search for stories which have a lot of unique and mysterious details because it gives me a lot of material to talk about and potential theories to explore. But that's not the case with the disappearance of the Millbrooks twins. These are two human beings who seemingly vanished into thin air. It's hard to construct any detailed theories about what might have happened to them because there is zero evidence to work with. However, I do feel this is an important story to cover, not only because it addresses some very relevant social issues, but because these two girls and their family were victims of a terrible injustice. You're probably familiar with the phrase missing white woman syndrome, which refers to a social phenomenon where the media loves to focus most of their energy on covering unsolved criminal cases that involve young, attractive white women who are preferably from a middle or upper class background. Cases where the victims don't fit this criteria can often get shortchanged by the media, and unfortunately, this philosophy applies to the Millbrook twins, who are a pair of African-American girls who hailed from a family who did not have a lot of money. While this case finally did get some mainstream attention in the Huffington Post in 2013, it has since been forgotten about again, and the twins' family have had no luck at getting their story more exposure in the media. A few months ago, the case was featured on a very good new true crime podcast about missing people called Thin Air, in which Shantae Sturgis was interviewed and shared her sister's story. Shantae then approached The Trail Went Cold with her story, and I am more than happy to give it some more exposure. However, I want to differentiate this episode from the Thin Air podcast, and since I am the first person to admit that I am not the greatest interviewer in the world, this episode will not be presented in interview format. However, I will be sharing all the information I have about this case, all of which has personally been verified by Shantae Sturgis. But before we get started, let's get some business out of the way first. The Trail Went Cold now has its own PayPal account and a new donate button on the website for anyone who's feeling generous. At the time of this recording, we have actually received two very generous donations from listeners named Marcella and Kelly. So a big thank you to both of you. We are truly humbled by your generosity. If there's anyone else out there who wants to make a donation, we would also be absolutely flattered and greatly appreciate it. Keep in mind that I record these episodes weeks in advance, so if you've already made a donation and I didn't mention your name just now, that's only because it technically hasn't happened yet at the time I recorded this. But do not worry, I will give everyone else an acknowledgement on a future episode. I'd also like to thank all my loyal listeners and supporters out there, especially those from the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit and the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online Forum. The Trail Went Cold runs on a bi-weekly schedule, and a new episode is posted every other Wednesday. We've got our own Facebook and Twitter pages, and another big thank you to all my followers there, which is ever-growing. We're also available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music, so if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it. If you give us a rating or a review at any of these places, you're opening the door for us to get more exposure and garner us some potential new listeners. Of course, I need to provide the obligatory shout-out to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and is my fellow co-owner of The Back Row, the pop culture website which hosts this very podcast. And, of course, the usual big shout-out to Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. So, let's now get things underway and share the baffling and tragic story of the Millbrooks twins. Our story begins in 1990 in Augusta, Georgia. The central figures are a pair of fraternal African-American twin sisters named Jeanette and Danette Millbrooks, who are both 15 years old. At the time, Jeanette and Danette lived with their mother, Mary Sturgis, who had 8 children altogether. As far as I know, the twins' biological father did not live with them, and was not a big part of their lives at this point. The family lived in an apartment in the 1800 block of Cooney Circle off Olive Road. At the time, the twins were 9th graders at Lucy Laney High School, and only a few weeks shy of their 16th birthdays. Anyway, on the afternoon of Sunday, March 18th, Jeanette and Danette left their apartment to go visit a family friend. This person happened to be the twins' godfather, and he was going to give them some money which they would use as bus fare later on. After visiting this person, the girls were heading home when they decided to stop at a gas station which was located on the corner of 12th Street and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, and was known as the Pumpin' Shop at that time. They purchased some chips, candy, and a drink before leaving the store together at approximately 4:30 p.m. And that's the last anyone ever saw of them. They never arrived home, and no one has the slightest idea what happened to them. And unfortunately, there just wasn't any evidence to work with here. The clerk at the Pumpin' Shop personally knew the girls, so she could verify that they were there, and she also reported that there was a vehicle parked outside at the time they left. However, she didn't get a good enough look at this vehicle to provide a description, and no one knows if it has any connection to the disappearances. Apparently, there were also sightings of the twins riding around inside a white truck with a white male that afternoon, but I'm not sure if these sightings were officially confirmed. Anyway, after their family failed to find them, Jeanette and Danette were reported missing, but back then there was a mandatory 24-hour waiting period before the police could do anything, which was pretty unfortunate since Danette suffered from seizures at the time, and she did not have her medication with her when she disappeared. Apparently, the twins' disappearance got one brief news story on local television, but after that, the case did not get featured in the media at all. And this is where the story starts getting a bit weird. But first, I want to provide a little historical context for the scenario. I have done 2 previous podcast episodes involving the disappearances of teenage girls. The first one was the Fort Worth 3 case, where 17-year-old Rachel Trelisa, 14-year-old Renee Wilson, and 9-year-old Julianne Mosley all vanished together during a trip to a Fort Worth shopping center in 1974. And the second case was the disappearance of 14-year-old Loreen Ron, who vanished without explanation from her apartment in Manchester, New Hampshire, in 1980. In both cases, the police's initial response was to write off the missing teenage girls as runaways, and they did not give their disappearances the proper investigations they deserved. And unfortunately, this was a common mentality during this time period, as you can find numerous missing persons cases from the 1970s and early 1980s involving teenagers, where law enforcement just decided that the victims ran away, even though there was little to no evidence to support this theory. Thankfully, this mentality finally started to die down in 1984 when a nonprofit organization was established called the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, also known as the NCMEC. From this point on, if your child went missing, you could contact the NCMEC and have their information entered into their database. And you could do this even if your local law enforcement wasn't taking the disappearance seriously, like if they assumed your child had just run away. Well, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children should have been invaluable resources for helping find the Millbrooks twins, but somewhere along the way, things went horribly wrong and a terrible injustice occurred. Much like the cases of the Fort Worth Three and Loreen Ron, the Richmond County Sheriff's Office in Augusta seemed to believe the Millbrooks twins simply ran away, but it would be a long, long time before they came to their senses. Needless to say, Jeanette and Danette's family did not believe they ran away, as they were generally very good girls who had no history of behavioral problems and had never run away from home before. Yet, for reasons that no one really understands to this day, the lead detective on this case was completely rude and dismissive towards the twins' family. At one point, he even accused Mary Sturgis of lying about her children's disappearance and told her she knew exactly where the twins were. This detective claimed he had heard from people that both girls had disappeared voluntarily and did not want to return home. And here's the weird part. He also claimed the reason the twins had gone into hiding was because one of them had gotten pregnant. And apparently, the other twin had just decided to follow her sister's lead and go into hiding with her. This news no doubt came as a great shock to their family, but unfortunately, the detective did not produce any evidence to support these allegations, nor did he provide an explanation for why he believed this story was true. There was no indication that he had actually seen the girls hiding out somewhere, just that he had heard rumors about it. It's almost like he was refusing to investigate a missing persons case on the basis of local gossip. And on April 2nd, 1991, which happened to be Jeanette and Danette's 17th birthday, the detective officially closed the case, claiming he had reached the age where he couldn't force them to come back home if they didn't want to. Which is pretty strange, since the age of majority in the state of Georgia is 18, not 17. And this would be the start of a bureaucratic nightmare for the Sturgis family, which would last for over 2 decades. For years, Mary Sturgis kept attempting to contact the Richmond County Sheriff's Office to inquire about her daughter's case, but they never responded to her, and she eventually got to the point where she gave up on trying to get a hold of anyone. Eventually, Shante Sturgis started becoming an advocate for the case. Now, at the time her half-sisters went missing, Shante was only 12 years old. In fact, on the day they disappeared, Shante asked Jeanette and Danette if she could accompany them to their godfather's house, but they said no and told Shante they'd be back soon. As you can imagine, Shante always wondered if things might have turned out differently if her sisters had let her join them that day. So when she became an adult, Shante started inquiring to the police about her missing siblings, but got the exact same runaround as her mother. In fact, at one point, she was fed inaccurate information, as their system claimed that Jeanette and Danette had been taken away from their mother. Needless to say, this scenario didn't make any sense, as why would a mother have two of her children removed from her home, but still be allowed to keep caring for the other six? The authorities kept telling Shante there was nothing they could do because her sister's case was officially closed. When the police wouldn't help, Shante tried getting the FBI involved, but no such luck. Law enforcement flat out suggested that the family hire their own private investigator to look into things, but they just didn't have the money for that. The family also had no luck getting the media to cover this story, even when they tried contacting such prominent shows as Oprah Winfrey, Montel Williams, and America's Most Wanted. Of course, as you probably know, John Walsh, the host of America's Most Wanted, is one of the world's biggest advocates for missing children since his own 6-year-old son, Adam Walsh, was abducted and murdered in 1981. But even he couldn't cover the case for the same reason no one else could. The Richmond County Sheriff's Office officially considered the case closed and just would not work with them. Essentially, this was a major catch-22. The Sturgis family couldn't get the media to cover their story because law enforcement considered the case to be closed, but law enforcement would probably never reopen the case unless they received some pressure from the media. So when did the Millbrooks twins finally have their case reopened? August of 2013. That's right, 23 and a half years after the girls originally went missing. After years of persistence, Shante finally got through to a law enforcement official who agreed to look into her sister's case, newly elected Richmond County Sheriff Richard Roundtree. Yes, that is the same name as the actor who played Shaft, so I guess it's only appropriate that he would be the first police officer to actually do the right thing. Anyway, Sheriff Roundtree openly called the situation a terrible injustice. He finally collected a DNA sample from Mary Sturgis so that it would be entered into their system for possible future comparisons. The twins' social security numbers were finally checked, showing no activity on them at all since they originally went missing. Some age progression sketches were created for Jeanette and Danette and released to the public to show what the twins might look like at age 39. And for the first time ever, the Millbrooks twins' disappearance finally got some mainstream media coverage, including a story in the Huffington Post. This was undoubtedly a major breakthrough for the case, but it wasn't all good news. It turns out the original files had been lost, so even though Sheriff Roundtree reopened the case, he had virtually nothing to work with. But here's the strangest element of this case. When the twins were originally reported missing, their information was entered into the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's database. Yet when Sheriff Roundtree tried to access their profile at the NCMEC, he discovered that it no longer existed. For reasons unknown, someone had decided that the Millbrooks twins were no longer missing children and completely removed their names and all the relevant information from the system. And they did so without even informing the Sturgis family. So essentially, Jeanette and Danette Millbrooks no longer existed. When a case is erased from the NCMEC database like that, it's standard procedure for the responsible party to list a reason for removing the case from the system. But no reason was ever provided, and there is no record of who actually did this. The investigation was literally back at square one, and unfortunately, after the initial media coverage in 2013, the story just kind of died out again. The Sturgis family has not had much success at getting the media to keep a spotlight on this case, as there hasn't been a major news story about it in 3 years. And this is why Shante Sturgis has now started lobbying to get her sister's story featured on some true crime podcasts, which are all the rage these days. And thus far, Thin Air and The Trail Went Cold have answered her call. Now, the standard structure for all my episodes is to provide an outline of the featured case and then offer up some theories of mine. But unfortunately, I can't offer too much in the way of theories for this particular case because there is virtually no evidence to work with. But I can say that I'm pretty certain that Jeanette and Danette did not just run away. Until I hear any evidence to support this story, I have no reason to believe that detective's claims that the twins decided to take off because one of them got pregnant. If Danette or Jeanette did get pregnant, there's no record of either of them having given birth at any point. It's pretty mind-boggling that a detective could just provide a victim's family with a story like that without giving any justification for why he thinks this story is true. Like I said earlier, it's almost like he just overheard some local teenage gossip about one of the twins being pregnant and decided, case closed, without doing any real investigative work. You cannot just close a missing persons investigations on nothing more than hearsay. To call this entire situation an absolute travesty would be a gross understatement. I mean, I've heard of numerous missing children's cases where the investigators did a piss-poor job, but I can't think of another one where the victims' names were flat-out removed from a database without any explanation. And another thing which stands out to me is just how unusual it is to find a missing persons case where a pair of twins disappear simultaneously. You'd think a case like that would be unique enough for the police to not just simply forget about it or let it slip through their cracks. So the obvious question is, Was this whole thing just plain old police incompetence? Or was there a deliberate cover-up here? But before I delve into that subject, I want to address two other pieces of information that Shante shared during her interview on the Thin Air podcast. She claimed that after the case was reopened, police tried to question Jeanette and Danette's biological father. But apparently, he told them he just wanted to be left alone and didn't show much interest in cooperating with the investigation. He seemed to think they were still alive and had just taken off to shack up with some man. It's also worth mentioning that the father once served time in prison for conspiracy. Apparently, after one of his acquaintances committed a murder, this man helped conceal the victim's body. But I have no idea if the father's criminal activity might have any relation to the twins' disappearance. The second piece of information I wanted to share is another cold case from Augusta involving a 9-year-old African-American girl named Tiffany Nelson, who vanished on June 4, 1994. That day, she was last seen putting air in her tires outside a convenience store, and this store was located only 3 miles away from the gas station where the Millbrooks twins were last seen. In 2005, Tiffany's skeletal remains were found in a shallow grave in a wooded area. In spite of some similarities, there's no indication that Tiffany's murder has any connection with the Millbrooks twins, but her case is also still unsolved. There were very few leads in that case, and it hasn't gotten too much media coverage, but as far as I know, at least law enforcement has never flat out sandbagged that investigation like they did with the Millbrooks twins. And ultimately, that's what really bothers me about this story. It would be one thing if police didn't want to try searching for the Millbrooks twins because they were just lazy and disinterested. This type of situation happens all the time, as sad as that may be. But here, someone actually went to the effort of removing the case file from the NCMEC database, and that really raises some red flags for me. This totally suggests that someone was trying to cover something up, especially since they went against proper procedure and did not even list a reason for removing their case or attach their name to it. It's easy to assume this might have been done by the same detective who shared all those rumors about one of the twins being pregnant, but I can't be sure. Again, if the laziness was their prime motivation for not investigating this case, it just seems weird that they would go to the effort of removing it from the database. Coupled with the fact that the case was closed on the twins' 17th birthday, and the original case file also mysteriously disappeared, and this whole thing comes across as awfully suspicious. But what could have happened to these two girls which would motivate law enforcement to orchestrate a cover-up? I wish I could formulate some theories about all this, but there's just no hard information to work with here. Sadly, one thing we do know is that there hasn't been any activity on the twins' social security number since 1990, so I do not think they are still alive after all these years. I think the most likely scenario is that Jeanette and Danette were both abducted shortly after they left the gas station that day, but I have no idea who could be responsible. It's no easy feat to abduct two girls simultaneously, but there were alleged sightings of the twins in a white truck with an unidentified white male. It's possible that someone offered them a lift home from the gas station, but then something bad happened. If Danette and Jeanette were willing to hitch a ride with someone, it could have been a person they knew and trusted. But as far as I know, there aren't any suspects at this point. But while I cannot provide much of an analysis about what I think happened to the two girls, I can at least do my best to get their story out there. So before I bring this episode to a close, I would like to thank Shante Sturgis for contacting me and for doing everything in her power to keep Jeanette and Danette's case in the spotlight. It's hard to think of a missing victim's family who have been ignored worse than this one. After a quarter century of not getting any answers, I really hope that the Sturgis family, most especially the twins' mother, can receive closure at some point. Shante maintains a Facebook page for her sisters titled Missing Danette and Jeanette Millbrooks, so be sure to visit their page to show your support or share any important information you might have. Also, I'd recommend listening to the Thin Air podcast episode about the Millbrooks twins, as you can hear Shante personally discuss the case in an interview. I will be providing a link to the episode on our website. If Jeanette or Danette Millbrooks are still alive today, they would be 42 years old. At the time of their disappearances, Danette was 5'6" and 130 pounds, while Jeanette was 5'4" and 125 pounds. They both have brown eyes and black hair, which was styled in a shoulder-length jerry curl when they went missing. Danette was last seen wearing white jeans, black shoes, and a white shirt with a Mickey Mouse on it. Jeanette was last seen wearing a blue pullover shirt, a white turtleneck, a beige skirt, white stockings, and white sneakers. Both twins had each of their ears pierced once, and a scar on their navel from a hernia removal operation which was performed shortly after they were born. It's also worth mentioning that Danette is bow-legged. Our website is going to be providing a link to their profile pages at the Charlie Project, which feature the aged progress photos of the twins and should provide you with an idea of what they might look like today if they are still alive. If you have any information about this case, please contact the Richmond County Sheriff's Office at 706-821-1096. That's 706-821-1096. If you don't have any hard information, but have your own theories about what might have happened, I'd still love to hear from you. Feel free to leave a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. robin.warder@icloud.com. Also, be sure to check out The Trail Went Cold on Facebook and Twitter. We're available for download on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music, so be sure to leave us a rating or a review at any of these places because that will help us garner more exposure. You can also check out my true crime and mystery articles at crack.com and listverse.com, and there's plenty of other non-true crime content you can find right here at the Back Row. So have yourself a good 2 weeks, and join me next time for another edition of The Trail Went Cold.
The Trail Went Cold is part of the Back Row Podcast Network. Visit the-back-row.com for more. The theme song was composed by Vince Nitro. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do that.